Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Rates and Lanes podcast. I am your host, Rico Muhammad. My co-host, Chuck Snow, will be joining us here shortly. We have a special guest joining us tonight as well. We'll talk about that here in just a few minutes, but we're going to start off the show as we normally always do. So if you are a member of the Rates and Lanes Facebook page, you go right over there, you can click on the link, and you can get a copy of this report. It's there for your viewing pleasure, and this report that I'm speaking of is the truck rate report from the USDA. It came out today. There's a little bit of movement on the report. So if you're working that spot market, some areas that you might want to make sure that you are in, Delaware, Maryland, Eastern Shore, Virginia, those markets are showing slight shortages. Another area showing a slight shortage is Southwest Indiana and Southeast Illinois. Once again, if you're working in the spot market, there may be some potential to be had and some favorable rates in those particular markets. Markets that you might want to avoid if you're on that spot market. Vidalia District, Georgia, Southern New Mexico, those two markets are reporting a slight surplus of trucks. And areas that have an outright surplus of trucks right now is Lower Rio Grande Valley, Texas, and Mexico Crossing through Texas. They are reporting an outright glut of trucks right now in those areas. And as we know, if you're working the spot market is a creature of supply and demand, so you want to be where the supply of freight is high and the availability of trucks is low. And that equals getting a pretty decent rate if your negotiation skills are up to par. So if you want to click over on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page and click that report, we only cover the first page of the report. There's five total pages on the report. There's a lot of information that you can get from the report, such as what type of fruits and vegetables are moving in which particular market. They also give rate information on this report, but we always warn everyone when it comes to the rates from this particular report. Not exactly 100% sure where those rates are derived from. They are not realistic, real-world rates. Those rates, it baffles me. I've tried to call to the USDA and kind of pick their brain on how they come up with the rate numbers that they publish on this weekly report. And they really can't really give me a solid answer one way or the other. But the rate information on there is not 100% accurate. Make sure that you already know your rates for the particular lanes that you know how that you are running, and that way you don't get yourself caught up in a pinch. Moving right along, jumping into this week's DAT Trendlines report. For the week of August 12th through the 18th, truckload demand has been picking up in the Midwest, but declines in other parts of the country continue to keep national average rates in check for vans, reefers, and flatbeds across all transportation types. There was an increase in the load-to-truck ratios for van and reefers last week, but the flatbed ratio dipped lower. So let's take a deeper look into how the rates were performing across the country, starting out with dry vans. Starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have average spot market rate for dry vans coming in at $1.61 per mile. Moving down into the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, we have outbound spot market rates coming in at an average of $1.81 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, leading the nation outbound spot market, dry van rates at $2.01 per mile. Dropping down to the south central portion of the United States, we have outbound spot market rates at $1.74. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we have outbound spot market dry van rates at $1.76. Moving over to the flatbed segment of the DAT Trendlines report. over the previous week. Starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have outbound spot market averages for flatbeds at 209. Coming out of the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at 234. Up in the Midwest, we have outbound spot market rates coming in at 237. That leads the nation. Dropping down into the south central portion of the United States, we show outbound spot market flatbed rates at 220 per mile. And coming out of the West Coast, we have outbound spot market rates at a $1.99 per mile on average. And jumping over into the temperature controlled or reefer portion of this particular report, starting out in the Northeast, outbound spot market rates for reefers at $1.84, dropping down to the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic at an even $2 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, leading the nation once again for all trailer types. Midwest still leads the nation on outbound spot market rates across all trailer types. But for reefers, the outbound spot market rate is at $2.40 per mile. Moving down into the south central portion of the United States, $2.02 per mile on the outbound spot market reefer rate. And coming out of the West Coast, we show an outbound spot market reefer rate at $2.20 per mile. Looking back to this is good for the past, actually for over a month now, we haven't had any reports come in on the bad broker report. So we don't have any bad brokers that are that have been in any trouble as far as their bonds being revoked or showing that they have payment history problems. So that's always a good news on that front. And once upon a time on the show, the bad broker report was taking up about half of the show. So that's always a welcome addition to see that we're not actually running a long list on the bad broker report. And now at this time, I want to go ahead and welcome in my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, the CEO of Trafix. And if you're not familiar with Trafix, Trafix is one of Canada's oldest and trucking and brokerage houses. Chuck, how are you?
We're doing well, Rico. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, doing great. It's been very interesting times. We got a lot of things that we want to try to discuss and get to tonight. But just kind of really quickly on just stuff that we've already touched on, what do you think about the things that we already talked about as far as the DAT report and the USDA report?
Okay, well, there's some things that are, like, so seasonal. You know, you've got that shortage of trucks in Maryland, Delaware, that area. You know, that's the tail end of the melons. You know, they start down in Homestead, Florida. They work their way up, same as you've got the melons, you know, coming out of – now they're up in Indiana. But this goes on year after year. And then you've got a surplus of trucks in – you know, in Texas, parts of Texas, you've got a surplus of trucks in New Mexico, because all over North America, and I'm talking about some of the furthest points, you've got local produce. And local produce is now, it's abundant, whether it's berries or broccoli, carrots, everything is coming out of the ground now. So there's no demand for anything to be shipped from places like, you know, Texas and South Georgia and places like that. So that's pretty much a seasonal thing. And as I keep telling people on this show, and I tell them when I meet them, you know, this is the danger when you play this spot market, and I don't suggest it. And the other thing I want to add is, you know, the rates are depressed. They're way under in most areas what they should be with the cost of fuel and the cost of operating a truck. But we'll go into that a little bit later. There's a lot of upheaval out there, and I'm sure you and I will talk about it.
Absolutely, yeah. We got a very intriguing article that we're going to maybe get into a little bit later in the show. And we've got some articles that we've already posted up on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page. So you can go over there, subscribe to the page, like the page. We try to get information out as best we can on the. That's our jumping off point on Facebook. We try to get the information out and different articles out to you as much as we possibly can. We try to put all the links to the things that we discuss here up over there so that you can go over there and actually see it for yourself and see what it is that we're talking about. And also tonight we have a special guest on tonight that we're bringing on, Mr. Matthew Esso. I hope I'm not butchering the last name, but he's from the Little Guy Show. Gentleman has a content creator in the trucking industry. He has done a wonderful job of creating content, and you know, from all different aspects of things like from the day he started training up into what he's doing now. So with that being said, we're going to welcome in the Little Guy, Matthew. Matthew, how are you this evening?
Doing good, sir. How are you?
We are doing well. We're doing well. Thanks for coming on to the Race of Lanes podcast. We're happy to have you up and aboard.
Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you.
Thank you for taking time out of your schedule. So, Matthew, tell us, what made you want to get into content creation? What was your desire to even begin the idea of kind of chronicling your journey in the trucking industry?
You know, my dad was a truck driver, still is a truck driver, my grandfather, everybody, you know how that goes. I did 6 years in the military. I got out of the military, went to automotive school, you know, looking to work on cars and everything, and soon found out that, you know, in the automotive industry, you need to either have all your certifications and also have a $30,000 toolbox in order to really make real money in the industry. You know, even though I graduated top of my class in automotive school, it just, you know, working, starting out at the bottom of the barrel in the automotive industry just wasn't going to cut it. So I looked into trucking, and when I looked into trucking, I couldn't really find anything helpful on the internet, except for YouTube. And, you know, you'd go on the forums, you know, and it was just all garbage, people arguing back and forth. But when I found certain YouTube channels, it was very, you know, educating, and it inspired me to start a channel up and kind of explain. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, you went off my little stick.
Oh, okay. But it inspired me to create a channel and maybe, you know, see what I could do and maybe put my spin on it. And I think the one of the things that helped my channel out in the long run was that I started my channel day one of truck driving school. And everything has been documented from day one, pretty much. All the good, the bad, the ugly, the ups and downs. And it's been just a roller coaster ride ever since.
So have you ever had, and you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, I noticed a couple of you, I jumped on your YouTube channel and I was able to catch a couple of videos, and it's kind of interesting, you know, I've seen, you know, you got some pretty good videos on there about backing up and stuff like that, and I think that's pretty helpful. Your main thing was you didn't see anything like that available on the internet. So you kind of just figured that would be a nice place to kind of fill that niche?
Well, no, I mean, I found a lot of those videos, you know, the backing videos, the how-to videos. You know, the only thing that I thought of, you know, is that I can make a channel, put my spin on it, you know, and more. And I noticed nobody was really doing it with a comedy, you know, style, comedic style to it. So I figured be my natural goofy self and mix in the training aspect of it and the educational aspect of it. And, you know, it took off, you know, like wildfire. And one of the cool things that I pride myself in with the channel is that very early on, even back, I think it was the end of 2012 was when the channel started, there really was no boosting your post or, you know, paying to advertise your post or your, you know, All of my growth is all organic, you know, word of mouth and, you know, YouTube's algorithms and everything. And, you know, so early on, I had people, you know, coming up to me and saying, hey, you know, you're the guy from YouTube. Oh, my God, you know. And I know what that feels like to be, quote unquote, starstruck from a YouTuber, because I'm a big car audio buff, you know, cars with loud systems and stuff. And I would follow this one channel that would do a lot of car audio YouTube videos where he would go to different car shows and document different people's systems and stuff like that. And one night I was at the racetrack with my family and I said to my wife, I was like, oh my God, babe, look, that's Brian from, you know, Modified TV. And she's like, what the hell is Modified TV? You know, and I'm like, that's the guy from YouTube, you know? And she's like, so? And I'm like, yeah, but to me, that guy was a big deal, you know? So I got to meet him and shake, you know, be in his video, and it was like, it was overwhelming. So I know what it's like for other people to walk up to me with that same feeling and to be able to inspire somebody to that level. It just pushed me even, it motivated and pushed me further to continue and, to be a goofball and to educate all at the same time. You know, and the channel's grown up to almost 62,000 subscribers and, you know, well over a couple of million views, you know, so.
So let me ask you this then, have you, and that's great, have you, how did you get started as far as, like, what did you do to market yourself? Did you have any type of, you say there was no real advertising or anything like that, but did you do anything above and beyond other than just posting the videos on YouTube? Did you have any way of maybe trying to drive traffic to your YouTube channel or anything like that?
I mean, like I said, I mean, back then, you know, YouTube was still in its infancy, kind of, sort of, you know, and at that particular time, I found myself in the right place at the right time, if you will, because nowadays, everybody and their mother has a YouTube channel about something, and even in the trucking space, it's so saturated with everybody with a channel doing the same type of videos and everything. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time doing, you know, good quality content. You know, I wasn't even doing any crazy editing back then. I was filming everything on my cell phone and uploading it raw, you know, no editing. You know, I didn't even have an intro and stuff back then, really. I had that kind of a small intro, but nothing crazy. You know, I just knew what I was going to talk about and stuck to that topic and kept it short and sweet for the most part and got my point across, and that, you know, resonated across the airwaves, so to speak.
Yeah, that's crazy. I saw that you had the nice little couple of different intros on a few videos. I guess I went back and came forward. So is that something that you did, or how did that come about as far as the intro with the graphics and all that stuff?
Well, I mean, there's a great website called Fiverr that a lot of people use, and I use myself, because when it comes to 3D graphics and stuff, I have no idea how to do that stuff. So there's a website out there that you can go and create intros, outros, and everything, and it's called Fiverr. It's F-I-V-E-R-R, I believe it is. Let me double check. It's, F-I-V-E-R-R. You can go on there and make, you know, have somebody create, there's a whole slew of people on there that create, you know, the intros and the outros for you. But you provide them with the information, you provide them with your logo, and then they turn it into something crazy. But even with the intro and the outro, I mean, I never really marketed. I did some T-shirts back in the day on Vistaprint. That was when I did my first round of T-shirts. And I only sold, like, I don't know, three or four of them, you know what I mean? But other than that, there really was no paid promotion or marketing plan. It was just all, here's today's video and enjoy it, you know?
So with that, you know, you hear about content creators and stuff on YouTube being able to generate income and stuff like that. Were you able to kind of monetize any of your videos, or how is that working?
Oh yeah, the videos. I think back then, I think you had to have I can't remember what it was back, because they keep changing it. Like now, I think, and now you got to have X amount of views, X amount of subscribers in order for Google to monetize your channel. And I think I had, I don't know, just a couple of thousand subscribers when Google sent me the offer, you know, over the email to become a partner. And then, you know, being monetized, you know, making extra money doing YouTube videos, pushed and motivated even me even further to, you know, use it as a secondary income. And, you know, even though I've only got like 60,000 subscribers, I only get about, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 views per video. But with that, I still make pretty good, you know, pretty good revenue from YouTube and stuff like that. So,
brilliant, brilliant. You know, out of all of the people in North America driving trucks and people that own trucks, you are one in like probably 5 million people. It's an honor to have you on this show. Seriously, this is brilliant.
I appreciate that. No, it's an honor to be here.
You've done a great job. So what exactly are you doing these days, besides for disrupting things on Instagram and YouTube?
Well, you know, I mean, I always told my wife, you know, the ultimate goal was to eventually come off the road and eventually, you know, be home every night with the family and everything. And I always told my wife that one day you'll see this YouTube stuff will pay off, you know. Because even early on, I think it was right after I got out of training with my first company that they know that, you know, the corporate guys noticed my videos, and, you know, they were offering me all types of perks, you know, and, you know, making sure they kept me happy. And then it was not long after that before another company reached out and said, hey, we can offer you this if you come over here and work with us. And then, you know, that happened. And then another company reached out and said, hey, we could offer you this. And then, you know, I bounced around from company to company on the false premise of these promises, you know, that I would get from quote-unquote recruiting via YouTube for them. And a lot of false promises. And now we have finally landed a position that's legit, you know, a legit recruiting / driving / media position, you know. And I'm learning a lot, you know, being in the office, learning the other side of the fence, if you will,
right.
You know, on, you know, dispatch and rates and doing orientation and all that stuff. So I'm learning a whole new side of trucking. And I think that's going to be great for content, because I'll be able to show drivers just what's going on from the other side of the tank, you know?
Absolutely.
You're breaking up pretty badly over here. Rico, you having the same problem?
No. It's coming in clear on my end.
Okay, maybe it's my end. Okay. I'm at the truck show down in Dallas, so anything's possible with the phone lines.
Yeah, I hear that interference,
yeah.
Too. I'm just wondering if it was me, but I don't think so.
Okay,
I don't know.
You know what? Cell towers do funny things sometimes. I just think it's fantastic how you have, you know, how you've elevated yourself and marketed yourself. This is, you know, this is a true American dream story in trucking.
So what and now as far as creating your videos and stuff like that, what do you use? What are you using now, and how do you use your? Say you start out with your cell phone. You got different types of equipment that you use now, and you know, if someone was interested in doing that, maybe creating their own YouTube channel or something like that, what advice would you give them on that?
You know, I always tell people, if they're going to create a channel, try and stand out, you know, try and do something different that somebody else hasn't done before. And like I was saying before, it's kind of hard to do that now because the space is so saturated with everybody and their mother having a channel. But the three main things are with YouTube is you got to have a good title, you got to have a great thumbnail, and you got to stick to that topic. You know, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. You got to stick to that topic. And if you can stick to that topic, you can get your point across within 5 to 10 minutes. you'll do great. You know, you don't need you really don't need no crazy editing, no fancy trickery or anything like that. You just got to get your point across and be direct, you know.
Okay. So as far as equipment and stuff like that, what you have when it comes to that?
I mean, like I said, I started out with an iPhone, you know, and even with Android nowadays, you could download a basic editing application on your phone and edit all your videos right there on your phone and then upload them directly to YouTube. So once you upgrade, you know, from the phone, you know, there's so many different cameras and drones and, you know, I mean, I've got three different cameras. I've got two drones. I've got microphones. I've got lights. I've got, you know, all types of different stuff. And, it's great because when you're getting the extra money from YouTube, it kind of justifies you and helps you buy all that equipment and progress your channel, so to speak.
Okay, cool. Well, little guy, you want to tell everybody how to find you, where your channel is, if you want people to be able to get in contact with you or whatever, you want to give out your information?
Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, if anybody wants to check out the YouTube channel, all they got to do is go to YouTube and type in The Little Guy Show. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. I do have a Twitter account under the same name, but I just don't use it that much. I mean, I don't have anybody helping me with, you know, mediating the channel as far as, posting stuff. So it's hard for me to keep up with all the different platforms. So my main ones are YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. And you can find me on all three of those under the same name, The Little Guy Show. And, just tune in and check it out.
Cool. Chuck, you got anything you want to add before we
thank you for joining us tonight. I really appreciate your time. It's been great having you on. And, I wish you lots of luck with what you're doing now.
I appreciate that, Chuck. I really do. I really appreciate it.
I'm sorry we didn't get a chance for you to come down to Gats here in Dallas and so we could break some bread together.
I know. I'm definitely learning a whole bunch of new stuff over here, and I would have been there. I wanted to be there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love going to the truck shows. It's like the truck shows is like, you know, our Comic-Con, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna learn all this new stuff in the office about, you know, the rates and the trucks and the drivers and. But we're gonna be ready for Matt's next year, and we're gonna hit it hard. So get ready for that. So we've got a lot of stuff that we're planning in the background already, and it should be a pretty good turnout for us for next year for Traveloco and myself. So.
Oh, that's great. Are you going to be going to the NACV show in Atlanta? At the end of October.
Actually, yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit more. I remember you had mentioned that to me the other day. So I'm going to look into that and definitely try to be there for that, for sure.
Wonderful. Well, I certainly hope to see you there.
Yeah, for sure. But, I appreciate you guys having me on. I look forward to, you know, doing this again anytime. Just let me know. And, we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, and be
Absolutely.
Safe and good luck to you.
All right, you guys have a good show, Chuck, and you guys will talk to you soon, okay?
Take care.
Thank
well.
You, Matthew. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
I'm a subscriber. I checked out his channel. Very interesting. Shifting gears now a little bit. I got an article that I posted up on the Racing Lanes Facebook page, a real serious article. If you want to get in and comment on this article, I'm going to read a little bit of the information that they have in here. But if you got comments or if you want to jump in, you can press number one to get in on the call queue. We'll take your calls. But this article is from the Business Insider. It says headlines of the article, at least 2,500 truck drivers have lost their jobs in 2019 as the transportation bloodbath unfolds. Here's the full list of bankrupt trucking companies. It gives off a full list of eight companies that have went out of business this year. And those eight companies, starting off with Kearney Trucking Company, 25 truck drivers. They were an Alabama-based company that was founded in 1983, announced on July 31st that the operation was shutting down. Owner David Kearney told Freightways that the cost of insurance forced the company to shutter. The next one on the list is Starlight Trucking Company. They had 28 drivers. Starlight Trucking, which was in business for 40 years, announced on July the 2nd that the company was closing down. The company was based in Caress, California. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. About 100 miles southeast of San Francisco, and mostly hauled livestock feed, nuts, and other products for the agricultural region. CEO Kobe Bell said in a statement on Facebook that the rising compliance cost of California regulations gutted the companies, particularly as rates have stagnated. We tried to provide, the CEO said, we tried to provide healthy work environment for our employees and give them the best wages and benefits we possibly could. But in the end, the rates were the rates that were available did not support the cost structure needed to compensate our employees appropriately, Bell said. The next company on the list is ALA Trucking, 32 truck drivers. Effective June 26th, the Anderson, Indiana-based trucking company, ALA Trucking, Inc., shut down after 31 years in operation, along with 15 other employees. 41 truckers with ALA lost their jobs. Terrell Transportation, 36 truck drivers from Terrell Transportation. A Bay Area-based company called Terrell Transportation shuttered on July 30th, Freightways reported. Terrell Transportation was in business for around 25 years. It employed 36 truck drivers, moved dry goods, beverages, and refrigerated food, according to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration database. Williams Trucking, 48 truck drivers. The Alabama-based Williams Trucking abruptly shut down on May 1st, telling its employees to finish up deliveries, bring their trucks back to the headquarters, and go home. LME, 424 truck drivers. On July 12th, LME posted on its website that it was no longer accepting loads and was shutting down immediately. The company employed more than 400 truck drivers. Based in Brighton, Minnesota, LME was a less-than-truckload company, trucking company in the U.S. LTL is a type of trucking in which multi-shippers share truck space to ship packages. Last month, a federal judge ordered the owners of LME to pay out $1.25 million to its former employee. LME owners ran a trucking company called Lakeville Motor Express that abruptly shuttered in 2016, leaving nearly 100 workers without back pay then. Falcon Transport, of course, 585 truck drivers. More than 550 truck drivers at the Youngstown, Ohio-based Falcon Transport learned in late April that their employer was going under, effective immediately. Counterpoint Capital Partners, a Los Angeles-based investment firm, bought the 116-year-old company in 2017. Counterpoint has not said why it shut down Falcon, but some speculate at the end of Youngstown's General Motors plant, which shuttered in March, contributed to Falcon's closing. It was like a bolt of lightning on a clear day, and I was expecting that, a Falcon trucker named Ed McCormick told WKBN, the local Youngstown CBS affiliate. New England Motor Freight, 1,472 truck drivers. On February 2nd, New England Motor Freight stunned the rest of the industry when it announced it was filing for bankruptcy and shut down operations. NEMF generated $402 million in revenue in 2017, raking in its 19th largest less-than-truckload trucking company in the U.S. LTL, we already talked about that, but it employed more than 1,300 truck drivers. So trucking has been, this year has been a rough year for trucking, especially with rates stagnating and all of the other different things. And we just kind of wanted to, not to have doom and gloom. Well, that's not what we wanted to do. But we wanted to kind of just make everyone aware of what the industry is experiencing right now. And I know I'll get calls and people are asking me constantly as far as what are the rates doing, what's going on with the rates right now. And Chuck, you want to speak to any of this and some of the stuff that's going on that we just kind of rattled off in these articles?
Yeah, Rico, you know what? First of all, I'm here in Dallas, and what I do is I get transport topics every week, and I get it online as well as hard copy, and I skim the online. Rico, it's interesting, skim it, and I don't have time. The company does not pay me to read at my desk, and by the time I get home at night, it's too late, and I have dinner and do a couple of things. It's time to go to bed. So I save up all my transport topics for airplane rides, for long airplane rides, and I binge read, and I don't read the stuff that has nothing to do, you know, the things that don't affect our company and don't affect me, I don't read them. But the other things I do, and you know, I read so much about, and it's funny because I had several copies so I could see the transition of our industry, because I've been saving them since the spring. So I must have had about 20 copies at least of transport topics, and you could just see it go from the truck factories being, you know, still at full tilt. And the last copy I read when I was landing was that the trucking manufacturers haven't seen anything this bad in 10 years. So we are the first into a recession. We are the last out of it. We are leading. What's happening now is, we are leading the economy, unfortunately, and that's what always happens. I will not mention the name on this show, but the largest flatbed company in the United States is felt, you know, they're feeling the pain because, of course, when you go through these times, flatbed gets hurt because building, all of a sudden, your building starts go down. People replacing machinery and plants, that dies down a little bit. It's all part of a cycle. As you and I have talked about a dozen times, at least on this show, there's been so many trucks added into the mix of things as compared to what we had 2 or 3 years ago. You know, that just makes things even worse. This has created what they call a perfect storm. The 2,500 jobs that you just talked about, most of those 2,500 truck drivers will have a job somewhere else because there is a shortage of good truck drivers. There will be some of those 2,500 people that will be unhirable because of their driving records, and maybe they were protected where they were. But the vast majority of those people will get jobs somewhere else. The bankruptcies that you mentioned were, I think, 8 companies, if I'm not mistaken, Rico. That's out of how many 100,000 companies? Noel Perry, what I read, one of the things that he had said in one of the transport topics, one of the articles, and he said, what we have seen is 8 of the many companies that were badly run, and they were badly run in 2018 when everybody was getting 4 and 5 and 6 and $10 a mile and all sorts of ridiculous rates. These guys couldn't make money then, and they're not making any. They're not making any more now that things have thinned out. When you do, when you do the DAT report and you're reading off how much this freight is paying, it's under market. But we have chosen as an industry to live in this live market where the market dictates the freight rate. It's all supply and demand, and it's, you know, and I keep saying it, and I say it on this show all the time. It's so important for our listeners that want to make it through this. Pick a lane. You can't be a generalist because you get hurt out there, especially with all the rules and the costs and everything else. That's the only thing that's going to protect you is become a specialist at anything, at something. This running down, you know, because you hear that, you know, that the rates are going to be great out of Florida or, you know, in southern Illinois or in southern part of Delaware, you hear that the rates are going to be good there next week and you run down there. That nonsense has to stop because you're going to be adding fuel to the fire with this. We have to get back to more of running our businesses as businesses and not just go and chase that spot market, because that's what's going to be the next thing. This is just the tip of the iceberg of what we're going to see with bankruptcies for trucking companies. You know, one of the many articles I read today said that the Wall Street, you know, and the people that get money from Wall Street have curtailed lending money to trucking companies, especially to startups and small operators. So that means that
So how's this for a headline? A trucking company's net income plunged from $2.5 million to $1,000, and it's yet another chilling sign of the trucking bloodbath. Do you know what company that is?
Not offhand. I have an idea.
USA Trucks.
Okay.
USA Trucks, okay. Net income in the second quarter totaled $1,000. Last year, it was $2.5
million. Wow. There you go. Because the costs have, you look at all the costs, but, you know, like, doesn't matter whether you run one truck or 5,000 trucks like Swift Hunt or 10,000 trucks, Swift Hunt, Schneider, those guys, the costs have gone up. We all pay more for tires. We all pay more for insurance. We're all paying so much more for tolls. And, you know, everybody's getting hit. And there will be some very, very large ones. Now, some of the big guys are very well insulated. They've got huge war chests. They've got great contract freight. They've got deals with some of the rails. You know, they work hand in hand with the rails. They've got different business, different business silos. And they will make it through this next period unscathed. But there will be lots and lots of ones that don't make it. You can, you know, the writing's on the wall. And, you know, it's one of my guys, one of my branch directors said to me yesterday, and this is a guy that knows brokerage and he knows that part of the business, but he doesn't know anything about trucking, but he's smart. And he said, Chuck, I don't know how anybody operating assets so they can make money. You know, I talk to everybody and I see what costs are, you know, labor costs and the cost to replace equipment. And, of course, there's pressure on a lot of the motor carriers throughout North America to replace equipment because, number one, the stuff that they're coming out with now, I will say, is getting – I'm hearing some phenomenal – reports on fuel mileage. You know, I'm hearing 9 miles per gallon. So you really can't, you know, as much as you like that 2005 Kenworth or Peterbilt that you're getting 4.5 miles per gallon, you cannot afford to run it. You know, you've got to step up and you've got to buy that new piece of equipment. But number one, it's so expensive to buy. And number two, where, you know, if you're a small operator and you've got to go to the bank, what bank is going to lend you money, especially in this market? You know, in this, all of this, you know, Wall Street knows about this. So it's problematic. And then the other thing is insurance. There's not a trucking company in this continent that has not been affected somehow by insurance. You know, there have been, as our friend Tommy Rook said, there's been some nuclear insurance settlements. That's what he calls them, and he's right. You know, for over $100 million.
And that's the thing about it. You know, you got these attorneys running around here all across the nation, standing on top of big trucks on their commercials and on billboards, and you know the one call that's all guys, and it created a culture. I don't know. I understand. You know. If you're involved in an accident, so on and so forth, but these outrageous settlements that is causing, you know, insurance to skyrocket through the roof is just absolutely insane. And that in turn is having another effect because, you know, they were talking up in Washington about increasing our insurance, you know, so I don't know who's behind, you know, when you think about it, are the lobbying parties behind wanting us to increase our insurance, our minimum insurance, so that they can then have a bigger war, you know, a bigger way to go after more money should you be involved, unfortunately, in an accident. And, you know, you know, no amount of money, you know, of course, we want to try and be as safe as we possibly can, and, you know, no amount of money is going to bring anybody's loved ones back. But, you know, I just don't understand how, you know, it seems like we should be capped off somewhere where it's not making it unreasonable for us to remain and do business.
I couldn't agree more, Rico. This industry, if you, you know, you and I have spoken about this, and our history in this industry, this profession, way, way back, if you look at truck regulation, when they regulated the transport industry, the for-hire business in North America, one of the main reasons it was regulated, there were two reasons. Number one, to make sure it didn't matter if you were going to be hauling cattle or textiles or oranges or whatever, that you could get your product to market. That was really important. And it was regulated to make sure that there was a supply, to build a supply of transport for an emerging economy. That was number one. Number two, the geniuses, and I mean this, the geniuses behind regulation originally looked at a business that used a hell of a lot of steel, it used wood, it used fuel, it used labor. And they said, you know what? This is an important part of our economy. It needs to be protected. And they did. And that's where trucking regulation started. And I was a huge proponent of deregulation. And, you know, I fought it. I was a disruptor and I was very successful at it. But I look back now and I see that, you know what? In a lot of ways, the industry itself, the profession itself overall, was much healthier when it was regulated. And now we have brought it to a live market, and it is slowly it's getting regulated again through legislation as far as safety. And I think the big thing that's going to change the for-hire carriage industry in the future is going to be insurance. And they're going to make it tougher and tougher as the insurance companies keep losing money. They're not going to want to insure people. I talk to insurance people all the time. That's one of my jobs. And none of these people are making money. They're bleeding. And they keep raising rates. And what they charge trucking companies still isn't covering it. You know, there was a crash on Saturday night just up the street from from where we live. And, you know, I don't know how the driver made out, whether he was injured or what. I don't think he was, it was nothing worse than an injury anyways. And hopefully he made it out okay. But, you know, when I look at those trucks were going, I left the house early on Sunday morning and, you know, the tow trucks were there. And tow trucks were still there at 11 o'clock Sunday night. And then all day Monday and all day Tuesday, they were doing repairs on the road and on the embankment and stuff like that. And I think they may have been doing some soil cleanup. And when I look at the cost of that, forget the damage to the truck, and it was a Freightliner, it was a write-off looking at it. So, you know, if it was a brand-new truck, there's up in Canada, there's probably $170,000 or $180,000 Canadian anyways for the truck. But by the time they finished, that was probably, including the road repair, that's probably $500,000 because they have the road, you know, all this road equipment there. So where does the insurance company get the money for that? That's just typical of one crash. And this is what's going to change this industry. And I think it may, fortunately or unfortunately, we're going to get some more pain until we get it right. But I think we will, between safer trucks, better training, and a lot of other things, I think that insurance is going to force us to be able to charge more for what we do, because the risk factor it's just not there. Risk reward.
So look, I want to read this one other part, and then I want to try to get to a solution real quick, and we're going to wrap up and get out of here.
Okay.
The leading explanation for why trucking is in a slump goes back to the central tenet of economic supply and demand, which we talk about here all the time on the Racing Lanes podcast. Larger economic trends likely increase factory retail or construction activity, which pushes up demands for truck drivers. And there's just more stuff to drive around. And you need more people to drive those trucks, and you need more trucks to move that stuff. So the supply comes from how many trucks and truck drivers are available. When the demand is high, trucking companies tend to go out, buy lots of trucks, hire new drivers in anticipation of profits to come. But then once the supply of the trucks and the truckers catch up to the demand, rates fall like a brick, making the investment hard to pay off, which is why you see the rates have for the past 6 months have either been stagnant or dropping. For the past 6 months, we haven't really had any increase. We haven't really seen much of a bump at all across any of the segments when it comes to spot market rates, especially. So solution-based, we try to think of some type of solution here on the Race Lanes podcast. We're not doom and gloom. We get shit done. We want to figure out how to make things happen and how we can put our listeners and people in better positions. And Chuck, I didn't even run this by you, but I'm kind of working on the fly here. So if I'm overstepping my bounds, by all means, pull me back. but you have two offices in the United States, right? You got Chicago and Dallas.
I have Chicago, Dallas, Houston, and Denver, and Detroit.
Okay, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Denver, Detroit. Everybody that are in those markets. Why aren't you reaching out to Chuck and putting his sales force to work? If you don't have the wherewithal to go out and actually, if you don't want to actually go do that hard work and go knock on those doors and get those customers, you have a resource right here. In those particular markets, that's one end of your dumbbell. We always talk about building your dumbbell. Work the hell out of Chuck's for people and put them to work for you. Like I said, Chuck, if I'm overstepping my bounds, pull me back. But I'm pretty sure Chuck would absolutely love for his phone to be ringing off the hook. If that's one end of your dumbbell, if that's one end of the area, that's half of your work. So now you can focus on the other end of the dumbbell and put Chuck's people to work and try to work out and negotiate some type of way that you can say, hey, 2-3 days a week, whichever customer that you got in this market that has a consistent shipment that's going to a particular place, I'd like to try that laying out to see how that works for my business, to so that I can create some type of regularity in my routes, so that you're not running from pillar to post all over the damn country trying to keep up with a spot market rate, and you can create a little bit more stability in your company and start to really get ahead of the game when it comes to running and operating your business. I implore you, Chuck, every podcast, I always make sure, Chuck, give out your numbers. How many people have actually taken advantage and tried to call Chuck and talk to him or talk to someone on his staff to say, hey, I'm trying to figure out a way that I can do business with you guys, because, Chuck, they have an excellent pace. They pay really quickly. They pay on time. They don't give you any trouble with it. I pulled stuff for Chuck's company. They didn't know I was pulling stuff for them, and I didn't have not one issue, not one problem. It's very smooth to deal with Chuck and them. So if you don't want to go out and initially you're a little afraid to go out and get that book of business to build it in your own area, well, out of those markets that Chuck just listed off, that's one end of your dumbbell. You could start working on the other end of your dumbbell. and creating something the way you can go and work and service those markets going back and forth on a regular basis, and that cuts out that's half of your work that you can get done just by making trying to utilize the resources that are available to you. Just thought I might throw that out there really quickly. And with that being said, Chuck, tell the good people how they can get in contact with you.
Well, if any of you are going to be at GATS, come on over and see me. I'm at booth 2716. I'm just about four booths away from FMCSA, so you can come and see both of us at the same time. You can send me an email to chuck@traffix.com, or you can call me. Now, I won't be there I won't be at work until Monday because I'm here in Dallas at the truck show and visiting my Plano office. But you can call me at 1-800-388-4352, and my extension is 203. You'll need that to get through. Otherwise, you're going to go to voicemail hell. And I'd be more than happy to help any of our Rates and Lanes listeners. I'll put you in touch with the right people. We even have round trips, guys. If some of you if you're in a certain area and you need to get back, there's all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff we can do for you. We've got a division in Montreal that handles show and event freight. And some of that freight never even, we'll take it into the States, drop the trailer, and that's power only. And some of that stuff goes for months at a time. A sweet deal of brand new trailers. There's all sorts of stuff you can do. Give us a call. You know, there's nothing wrong with using a company like Traffix as your third-party sales force. That's what we do. We are your sales force. So thank you for the plug, Rico. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Charlie. I just think that, I'm reading all this stuff, and I get impassioned. I get emboldened by it. But at the same time, I want for us to stop just sitting around and letting stuff happen to us. What the hell are we going to do about it? Are we going to just play the victim role? Or are we actually going to be active and figure out something, because, look, doing the same thing over and over again and getting that same exact result, well, that's the definition of insanity. We got to be willing. Something has got to jolt you to the point to say, damn it, I got to do something different because what I've been doing ain't working. I got to switch it up some kind of way. And you got
100%.
Nothing to lose. You got to open up your mouth. There's an old saying, closed mouths don't get fed. You
got
to open up your mouth and take advantage of relationships that are already, we've already tried to make friends, through vicariously through other things and the guests that we've had on the shows. You got to, these people, they would love to hear from you guys. They would love to hear from you guys. They would love to see how they can assist you with the services or whatever else. And we got a jewel. We have an absolute jewel in Chuck and his network that I don't know if any of people are actually taking advantage of. And I don't know why, I don't know if it ever crossed your mind or whatever, but that would have been, if it was me, if I'm having a hard time, trust and believe. I wouldn't hesitate for 1 minute. Hey, Chuck, y'all got anything on a consistent basis coming back to Atlanta? I can start. Atlanta's my home. Is my home network. I'm gonna work the hell out of my home network myself and allow Chuck to get me my backhaul. And if that's the whichever market that there is, if I want to go to Dallas, if I want to go to Detroit, if I want to go to Chicago, I'm gonna be like, hey. Anything consistent coming out of Chicago, how does that work? How do I fit into what it is that you already got going on that can work on a consistent basis? How can I do that, and how can I lock that freight down where it doesn't even go on the board no more? Let me get on that pocket list. Let me go and service the hell out of your customer and you and prove myself so that, it's mutually beneficial for everybody involved. Just wanted to kind of put that bug out there, everybody. It's time for us to get up out of here. Be safe out there, everybody. God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and we'll talk to you next week.
Catch you on the flip-flop.